Far below them, they could easily make out the twin shapes of Doc and Lori, lying close together on the beach, seemingly asleep.
Oddest love match I ever saw. I know he's not really 230 years old, but he's definitely around his middle 60s, and she's still in her teens.
Are you disapproving, lover?
No, of course not. I'm pleased the old goat's so happy. And the girl couldn't have found a nicer person than Doc, especially after that double crazy keeper she lived with.
Look at JB.
Ryan, arm held loosely around Christie's slender waist, shaded his eye against the sunlight. The armorer had laid his coat on the sand and was stooped over the stripped segments of his blasters, carefully wiping each one, using a tiny container of oil to grease them. JB was in his element, relishing the vacation in his own dedicated way.
And Jack looks like a little boy at play. Not that he ever had any kind of childhood.
Jack's white hair blended with the sun-bright sand. As they watched, the lad flicked his wrist. There was a flash of silver from the thrown knife as it splashed into the river. Jack plunged his hand into the water, coming out with something that wriggled and glistened blue-green in his fist. As though he sensed that he was being watched, the boy whirled around, scanning the wall of the forest. He spotted the man and the woman far above him, and waved the trout in triumph. Jack shouted something to them, but the words were whisked away on the soft westerly wind.
Supper should be good, lover. Come on, let's walk some more.
She waved to Jack, and then she and Ryan stepped back out of sight of their companion on the beach. As they made love on a bank of light green moss, shaded from the sun, Ryan kept the G-12 at his side. This place was as near to an Eden as anything he'd come across in the Deathlands, but that didn't mean that it was free from serpents. The foaming stream that fed the waterfall was only a few yards from them, chattering over the rounded stones. A miniature wading bird, wings darted with vivid turquoise and crimson, hopped and picked its way through the water. A gold-throated woodpecker hammered away at a live oak behind them, the thin sound of its rapping beak echoing around the forest. A muty raccoon, no more than 4 inches long, skittered over the fawn carpet of leaf mold, ignoring the lovemaking couple who watched it.
Quite a change to see a muty animal that's gotten smaller.
I saw some bear tracks and what I guess is a bobcat. They looked a couple of weeks old or more.
Christie pretended to push Ryan off her, looking around.
Gaia, but I hope you're right. A bobcat on top of me as well as you would be too much.
Oh. Ryan moaned in pleasure as the girl laughed. When he was deeply buried in her, she was able to do amazing things with her muscles, lying quite still, yet somehow caressing him with rippling waves of pressure. He lowered his face to hers, kissing her gently on the lips, tasting sun and salt on her skin.
I love you, Ryan Cotter.
The tip of her tongue danced over his lips, probing between his parted teeth. She sighed as he thrust harder against her, feeling his swelling climax racing closer.
Not yet. Not yet. Not yet.
Her head rolled back. The long coils of her burning hair seemed to rise, brushing Ryan's cheek and shoulders with an odd, sentient life of their own.
I can't hold on.
Soon, lover, soon. Yes! Now, you fierce bastard, now!
They fought to a mutual orgasm, Ryan collapsing on top of her, feeling as though the core of his soul had been sucked out from his loins. He could feel her powerful muscles fluttering uncontrollably with the power of her own ecstasy.
Fireblast. How do you like them apples, lover?
I guess you don't get many of them to the bushel, huh?
Ryan rolled off her.
Where'd you get that expression from? Not many of them to the bushel.
Back in Harmony. Mother Sonia had a host of old sayings like that. Guess she never figured it'd be used for a real mind-blower like that.
Guess not.
Didn't you have sayings like that, lover, in your own family?
Not that I recall.
The smile slipped away, and she saw the tension come snapping back into his face.
Ryan?
He stood up, turning away from her. She had a moment to admire the muscular slimness of his naked body, his back, arms and legs seamed with a multitude of old scars.
Ryan, I'm sorry if I touched a nerve.
Don't sweat it, lover.
He moved to the edge of the water and dipped a toe in it, whistling at the cold.
Feels like meltwater.
Going to bathe?
Yeah, why not? Come join me.
She gasped at the shock of the icy stream as she crouched to wash herself, She leapt out suddenly, running on the cropped turf to try to get warm again. A raven, wings carrying the polished sheen of sunlight, floated over the treetops, catching her eye. Christy pulled on her silken bikini panties, adjusting them across her hips, easing the flimsy material from the cleft between her buttocks. She hoisted her trousers and tugged on the elegant western boots. The water had splashed her hair, and she ran her fingers through it, letting it float across her shoulders.
Come out, lover. You'll freeze, and the cold's doing nothing for that.
It'll warm up.
Get dressed, Ryan. Then come and sit here by me. There's another hour or more before we need to be heading back to join the others.
He got dressed, leaving his chest bare, relishing the feel of the sun on his skin. Ryan held up his brown shirt, shaking his head at the stain on it, which was nearly black.
I was thinking. Poor Hennings.
Seems years passed, but can't be more than a few weeks since he bought the farm. One too many mornings.
Maybe we should settle on going west and try to find some of the trader's old crew.
Christy rested her hand on his bare shoulder, feeling the skin still chilled by the stream.
What about Virginia?
And the Shens?
Sure, lover. And the villa at Front Royal, where someone's the Baron. Someone who owes you a debt.
It's been too many years. Like you said before, Christy, 1,000 miles behind. Best leave it there.
But he couldn't hide the note of doubt in his voice. The girl lay stretched out on her back, hands behind her head, looking up at the harsh planes and angles of his face.
You aren't sure?
No, I'm not.
Talk about it.
You know the story. You heard it down in the swamps.
I want to hear it from you, Ryan, now. Your story, your words. There'll never be a better time.
Ryan folded the blood-stained shirt and placed it on the grass. Then, as he lay down at the girl's side, began to speak.
Plant a bullet anywhere in the domain of Front Royalville, and it'd grow a blaster. That's what folks used to say. By the long winter, it was a good rich land, Christy. The biggest villa in all of Virginia. My father said he figured it might be the biggest in the whole of the Deathlands. But I don't know about that. The nukes came so thick the sky was black. But they were short half-life missiles, most of them. My great-great-grandpa took what he saw and held it fast, or so the legend goes. Great-grandpa got more. Timber and water and grazing. Cattle and horses. Even a few hogs. Deep in the Shens there were sheltered hollows where the rad didn't reach. Great-grandpa Ryan built and stole and killed and kept.
Christy didn't want to interrupt the flow of words from the man at her side. She felt that he wanted to talk it out, and like she'd said, now was the time and the place for it. But she asked anyway.
You were named after him?
Surely was. He had chill cred, did Great-grandpa Ryan. His son just held what there was. By then, around the mid of the century, there was some trouble from the Walkers and the Takers.
Heard my uncle Tyus McCann speak of them. Said they were the descendants of the Levelers and the Diggers.
Never heard anything about them.
Well, go on, lover. Sorry I interrupted.
She reached out to touch his left hand and felt a reassuring squeeze from Ryan.
My father took it over around 2050. By then, the power was established. There was an uprising of the workers on the west side of the ville. Wanted rights to the land they worked. Father put it down. Lots of dead. Gibbets on every hill from Nineveh to Oak Ridge. It had been a dreadful, awesome sight. It struck fear into the hearts of every man, woman, and child who worked for Front Royalville. The bodies hung there, tied with waxed cobbler's twine that didn't rot. The birds picked at the soft tissues of the faces first. The eyes and the lips went next, then the cheeks, and the tender flesh around the neck. As the slashing wind and rain tore the thin clothes away from the corpses, more of the weathered meat was revealed for the crows and the ravens to feast on. My father, Baron Titus Carter, was a tall, broad-shouldered man, with fierce eyes and a ready temper. He married the daughter of the Baron of a neighboring ville, joining the families. He took over the other ville when his wife's father, an excellent horseman, died in a mysterious riding accident. My mother, Lady Cynthia, was never physically strong, and after the birth of the third child, that would be me, she sank into a decline and a wasting sickness. accompanied by a bloody flux that carried her off less than a year later. She was buried in the Marble Cotter family mausoleum. My brother Morgan was the firstborn, tall and as straight as a tree. He could outride, run, wrestle, shoot, or swim any of his fellas. He was kind, where his father was cruel. Considerate, where the Baron was a thin-lipped autocrat. Morgan took care to watch over me, his youngest brother, protecting me from any danger. Turns out the main danger was one none of us would have ever expected.
Harvey.
Harvey. 2 years younger than Morgan, and 2 years older than me.
Why didn't your father do something to check him?
Harvey was a bitter, evil bastard. He was everything that his older brother wasn't, and he lacked every one of Morgan's virtues. They told me that his birthing ruined him. He was breached, they say. One leg trailed like this, and his shoulder was hunched and crooked up. Ryan limped around the clearing, his right leg dragging a deep furrow, gouged from the soft green moss. His right arm was lifted and twisted, giving him the lopsided walk of a hunchback. Christy watched him, face solemn.
I recall an old tape we had in Harmony. An actor from Europe. The paper was torn and the name was gone, but there was a picture on the label of a warped, bent man, long black hair, and a chain of gold. It was a play about a baron from olden times. Most had been wiped by the pulse, but the start was left.
Ryan dropped his shoulder as he sat down once more by Christie's side. Was this baron like Harvey, a blood-eyed bastard?
Uncle Tyus McCann knew the play. He said this baron killed old men and children and married the wife of one of the men he killed. How he could smile and smile and still be a villain.
Harvey smiled like that. If he could find some puppy to blind or a kitten to drown and save and drown again, that was when he smiled a whole lot. I learned early on, Christy, that when Brother Harvey smiled, it was time for little Ryan to get the fuck out of his way. The sound of the waterfall seemed to be changing, matching the somber mood of Ryan's tale. It no longer chuckled brightly over the stones. Now it seemed to whisper and mutter of dark plots and inductions dangerous. The afternoon was becoming colder. Christy shivered. What is it, lover? Want to go back to the others? I could smell wood smoke. Jack must be getting his fish ready.
I'm okay, Ryan. Go on.
What happened to this crookback baron of yours?
Got chilled.
Yeah. Yeah, be good if... Where was I?
Morgan and Harvey.
She noticed that twice already, unconsciously, Ryan's right hand had reached and touched the scar that seamed the side of his face, jagged from eye to mouth.
Yeah, Morgan and Harvey. Well, Morgan always tried to guard his back, tried to warn our father.